Good afternoon, everyone. I want to welcome you to our teleclass on breastfeeding basics, everything moms need to know. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Hillary Perlman, and I'm the director of sales and marketing for Mommy Bites. We're really excited to have this teleclass today. Our expert is fabulous, and I can't wait for you to hear from her. But before we do that, just a little bit about the format and logistics of our classes, in case you're new to our teleclass series. You are all muted right now, so you do not need to worry about background noise, since we've got people calling in from all over the country. We might even have someone from international. We have moms who might be on their lunch break at work, or maybe even breastfeeding. Wouldn't that be great? So wherever you are, whatever you're doing, just relax and you don't have to worry about any noise. If you'd like to ask any questions during the class, it's super easy. And you'll see on your event landing page in the top left corner, there is an Ask a Question button. Simply click on Ask a Question and a box will pop up for you to type your question and it's submitted. We will be monitoring and answering your questions throughout the class. You can ask as many questions as you want and you can put your name on the question or leave it as anonymous. I have a feeling that a lot of you will have some of the same questions, so it'll be great to cover what everybody wants to hear. We're also recording the class, so you do not need to take notes. We'll send all of you a link to the recording within a few days, along with some additional resources, so please feel free to sit back, relax, and enjoy the class. Before we get started, I want to introduce our expert and give you a huge thank you to the sponsor of today's class, Lancinot. A little bit of a background, Lancinot was actually founded by a breastfeeding mom in 1984, and they've been providing moms just like you all breastfeeding advice and resources for over 30 years now. They offer moms a variety of solutions to make sure that every mom can breastfeed for as long as she chooses, whatever her breastfeeding needs may be. They have amazing resources on their website, which is lancinot.com, and on their Facebook page, both of which I'll send you right after the class. Not only do they have award-winning products and maintain the highest quality standards in the industry, but they also really go out of their way to continuously provide education and resources. And I believe that their commitment to moms, babies, and families speaks very highly to the kind of company Lancinot is. Our awesome expert today is Gina Chanye. I'm sorry, Gina. Lancinot is Vice President of Healthcare and Media Relations. She's a certified lactation counselor and a nationally recognized expert on breastfeeding. She's been with the organization for over 11 years. She travels all over the country educating moms on this important topic. She's really become Mommy Bites' go-to expert for breastfeeding. We're delighted to have you here today. So why don't you give us a little bit about your background and share a little bit of your story, Gina.
All right, thank you. I love Mommy Bites. I love anytime we do this because as a former breastfeeding and pumping mom myself, classes like these and, you know, experts like lactation counselors who are really there to answer questions are really the people that help me get through any challenges that I had. I have been with Lancinot, it'll actually be 12 years in March, which is crazy, but I was a Lancinot mom before I started working here, and I was a breastfeeding and pumping mom, a mom who was pregnant who just thought, oh my gosh, what am I doing? I have no idea. So I've been there. I've done that. All the same questions that you guys are probably going to have are questions that I had along the way. I'm a lactation counselor, which means that I've been through training and helped moms all around the country, all around the world, you know, listening, supporting, giving guidance, giving feedback. And one thing that I really, you know, want to say, this is something from me personally, but also something from the company is, you know, we don't just push products. Yes, we're a product company, but we don't push products. We really want to make sure that we're helping every mom, every baby, every parent, really, family, do what they want to do on their journey, and I'm there to help, to support, to guide. And if a product is going to help, great. but not always the case. Sometimes it's positioning, sometimes it's latch on. So that's something that I really want to stress. Yes, we're in the breastfeeding sphere, but we're more than just putting things on a shelf and looking for that dollar. It's actually, we're all in this together, and sometimes it's that little word of advice or shoulder, that you want to lean on, because it can be isolating, and that's why I love doing these classes and interacting with moms, even though we're not seeing each other face to face. The question that you have probably is something that someone else has and is going to help, fellow moms. And our common thread is breastfeeding, is, being a mom, getting through these challenges together. And, there aren't always challenges. Sometimes it's just, oh, I have a question, and how can I do that? And it's not always scary, but in those times where we have challenges, it's good to know that there's a resource to turn to. So, Hillary, I think one of the ways that we had done this before, and I'm sure a lot of you have these questions, but one of the ways that I can get this started is one of the biggest questions that moms have is, what should I do to prepare for breastfeeding while I'm pregnant? And I understand there's probably a mix of people on here. There are probably pregnant moms. There are probably moms that are pregnant maybe with their second child or third child. Some of you are pregnant with your first child. Breastfeeding, there are a lot of sort of basics around breastfeeding supply and how to keep up that supply and positioning and all of that. One of the things that I want to stress is that there's nothing that you physically need to do to prepare for breastfeeding. Your body is designed for this. Our bodies make milk. When you're pregnant, your body is already making milk, because when baby comes out, your body wants to make sure that there is something available for that baby, and it's a natural process. So you don't need to, there are a lot of old wives' tales about roughing up your nipples, and you really just don't. Like, just even the thought of that makes me cringe. You don't want to do anything like that. You don't need to do anything. But one of the biggest things that you can do is educate yourself. Reading what to expect, figuring out, what are the normal processes of breastfeeding. One of the biggest things that you can do is read about what's normal. Babies feed a lot. They just do. They've got little tiny tummies that are about the size of a marble when they're born. So if you think about that, when they pee and when they poop, they drink, they pee, they poop, it goes out, then you need to refill their tummy. And so that's one of the things that if you read and find out about these things from credible sources, you'll know what's an issue and what's not an issue and what's just sort of normal. Taking a breastfeeding class. This class is obviously something that's going to provide a lot of information for you, but taking another class, like maybe at your hospital or your birthing center or in your community, because then you can actually be hands-on. They have dolls there. They have educators there who can actually show you positioning. But it's really, you can't over-educate yourself about this. I think one of the things that you could do is kind of, sometimes people get a little overwhelmed with the information, and that's understandable. But one of the things, it is about confidence and commitment. This is what your body was designed to do. Your body is designed to make enough milk for your baby. It's when we start introducing interruptions to that natural process that then it starts to, perhaps affect supply or, our bodies are somewhat mechanical, so we have to teach the body what to do, and the baby will teach your body how much milk to make by taking the milk out, and then your body replenishes it. So understanding what the basics are and what the premise of breastfeeding is does help allay a lot of those fears that you may be having, in the same way that you're going to be researching labor and delivery and what's actually going to be happening. The more you know, the less scary it tends to be.
So, Gina, if I can interrupt you there, one of my questions is diet. We have a lot of questions. What type of diet should I have? Does the same diet apply for when I'm breastfeeding as the diet I'm having when I'm pregnant? Are there certain foods I should avoid, I should eat, things like that?
There are certain things that are going to be really great for breastfeeding, and there are going to be some things that, you know, aren't great for breastfeeding. Breast milk is something that your body is producing. It is a liquid. It is a fluid. I don't like calling it a bodily fluid, because then people say, like, oh, I don't do these bodily fluids in public, and that gets into the whole thing about people feeling uncomfortable with breast milk. But it is a fluid, and so anything that you eat, in the same way anything that you drink, does get metabolized and goes through your system and could eventually end up in your milk. And it just depends on how your body breaks down foods or liquids. So, you know, there are sometimes when babies are sensitive to spicy foods. But if you've been eating spicy foods and the foods that you like and prefer while you're pregnant, your baby's already gotten exposed to those. So your baby might not be uncomfortable if you eat something spicy, but it all depends on watching your baby. And is your baby a little gassy when you've eaten something spicy? Because that'll actually make your milk taste a little spicy. Same thing with garlic. And so it's all, like, if you notice your baby has a lot more gas or seems a little bit uncomfortable, and sometimes there are going to be times where your baby is fussy and you have no idea why, and you'll just sit there and wonder how the heck you're ever going to be able to figure this baby out. Trust me, I've been there. But sometimes you can correlate it. Like, my baby did not like it when I went and ate tapas, Spanish food. Like, it's something about it just would made her feel uncomfortable. So then I didn't eat that, and then it worked itself out. And so I said, okay, well, I'll have that after I'm breastfeeding. And this question also comes up about, like, coffee or caffeine or drinking a Coke. Caffeine, you know, again, it's not like you're drinking a Coke and your baby's going to get that full can of Coke through your breast milk. It goes through your system. You deplete some of it when you, you know, go to the restroom. So sometimes caffeine can make babies agitated also, and you really don't want to have an agitated baby who then won't sleep and then gets overtired and then sleeps maybe too long and doesn't want to nurse at usual times. So anytime you're noticing things like that, the best way to figure out what it is that's bothering them is cut it out one thing at a time. Milk and dairy products are also some things that can irritate a baby and make them a little bit more gassy. Dairy is just very difficult for a baby system to break down. And so that's why we, you know, put off cow's milk until a year, until the baby system is more mature. So sometimes when babies are more gassy, when they're breastfeeding, it's because the mom is drinking milk, which is great for calcium, good for a lot of things, vitamin D, but there are other sources, you know, for the mom to get. The other question about drinking is alcohol. And the American Academy of Pediatrics, leading medical organizations are talking about everything in moderation. Everybody synthesizes and breaks down foods, liquids, alcohols differently. It depends on your weight. You really just want to make sure that you're doing it in moderation. You know, a glass of wine, a glass of beer, you know, all those things. You don't want to get to a point where your reaction time is lower. You don't want to make sure that you're not too sleepy, because those things can make you sleepy. It's about safety as well. So you really just want to be very, very, very moderate. Some moms ask me about pumping and dumping. Pumping and dumping is just one of the biggest myths really ever. One of the things that I can say, though, is if you've nursed, it's better to have, you know, if you're at a party or you want to have a glass of something, it's better to do that after you've nursed, because the baby's nursed, they've gotten their meal, you can have a glass, and then it's going to work its way through your system. But if you have a glass and then you immediately pump, it hasn't even gone through your body yet. So that's just going to be a waste of milk.
Okay, I think that is some great information on diet, because, you know, we all get caught up on those old wives' tale. If we can move on, because I can see we have some questions about that, We wanted to talk about some common issues with breastfeeding and how they can be treated. Some of the big ones that I know I personally encountered and a lot of our mommies are mastitis, engorgement, and plugged ducts. And just if you can, again, because you're the expert, even explain what these items are, because some people luckily have not had these problems, so they don't know what they are, but it'd be nice if they had a heads up should they encounter them.
Right. One of the premises of breastfeeding is supply and demand. So when your baby, your body makes milk, your breasts will swell with milk, your baby will latch on, you'll latch your baby on, your baby will latch on, and your baby will then take the milk out. And when the milk comes out, then your body will replenish it. It's such a cool process. So what goes out gets replenished. The baby drinks 4 ounces out of your breast, and you're not going to be able to measure it, but you can actually feel it. You can see your breast large and swollen sometimes. And what goes out then gets replenished. And your body starts to understand through those first couple of days, first couple of weeks, how much the baby needs by what they take out, and then your body will then replenish that same amount. So there are, like, understanding that and understanding that your baby's tummy is so tiny that they're going to need to feed very often. There's no way to spoil a young baby like that. You know, sometimes moms say, well, I don't want to put the baby back to the breast. They just ate. Well, but they're hungry. And they don't know, like, all they know is the instinct of their tummy is empty. They want more milk, or they want something to put in their tummy. And so there are those three potential conditions, which the first one is engorgement. In the beginning, again, your body doesn't know how much milk to make. So it's going to make a lot, which is a good thing. So your body is going to, your breasts are going to swell. Your body's going to say, okay, you've had the baby. Now I need to make this milk. And you're going to probably be very surprised with engorgement, with swelling of your breasts. Trust me, they go back down. And one of the best ways to avoid that or to handle it when it happens is feed your baby frequently. Now you may be thinking, hold on a second. If I'm feeding frequently, that means my body's going to be making more and more milk, and then I'm going to get even more and more swollen. But what's actually happening is that your baby is teaching your body how to moderate that milk supply. So if you're feeding your baby at regular intervals, like as far as, you know, every hour and a half to 2 hours, sometimes it takes a little time for them to get used to it. They're learning. You're learning. And then they're finished, and then maybe a half an hour, 45 minutes later, they start sucking on their hands. They're smacking their lips. They're rooting around looking for something to suck on. That's an indication that they want to nurse again. You want to pay attention to those cues, because sometimes as humans, we want to control everything, but our body is telling us, look, I've made the milk. Your baby's telling you, oh, it's time to eat because I'm sucking on my fingers now. And so that's a way to help teach your body. Every time you nurse, you're teaching your body how much milk to make, and it starts to regulate. And sometimes moms worry after they've been really swollen and engorged. Once your body figures that out, they say, oh, my gosh, wait, I don't have any milk because my breasts aren't swollen anymore. That's actually a good thing, because that means your body is making as much as it needs. The milk's in there. I think a lot of moms jump to the conclusion they don't have a lot of milk. Your body is going to make that milk until we tell it to not make the milk. So if we don't put the baby on the breast frequently, we're telling our body nothing's going out, so don't make anything to replenish it. So engorgement is really swelling. And don't watch the clock. It's called feeding on demand. Watch your baby. And it does defy logic sometimes. Like, I swear I just nursed the baby for an hour. How could they possibly be hungry 45 minutes later? But they are, because they've peed, because they've pooped, because they've taken a nap, and now they want more energy. And so they're asking you to nurse again. A plugged duct is what happens if you get engorged, the milk has nowhere to go, and it can get jammed up in the channels. It's basically in your breast, there are a lot of channels. They're like little roads that lead to the nipple, which actually help the milk go out. They're like pipes. And so if you aren't nursing very frequently, your breast can get really swollen and it can get stuck. Milk is very fatty. And so a plug duct can literally mean it's just a fat deposit. It's just milk backing up in one of those channels. And one of the best ways to work that through is gentle massage at the site of the little plug, which will feel like a little lump. And it's literally like a milk solid, and working through that. And the baby has such strong suction that they'll pull it through. They'll dislodge that plug, or you can actually pump. Baby is always better than pumping. But that's again, you want to feed on demand because you don't want things to get backed up in your breast. Another thing that can actually cause a plug duct is wearing restrictive clothing. Again, those are channels. They're like pipes in your breast. You don't want to kink that channel. And if you have an underwire bra, that can kink that channel. And it's literally like if you take your finger and you're pointing it straight out and then you bend it, that milk can't get through that channel. So you want to make sure that you have frequent feedings. You want to make sure that you're not wearing very tight clothing, very tight bras. Underwires are not recommended for breastfeeding moms for that reason. Now, you know, when you get a plug duct, you might feel not so great. You know, you might think like, oh, I'm so tired. I'm not really, you know, you could get a low fever because it's basically your blood and your body is responding to something being blocked. So again, you can nurse through that. You can pump through that, but keep feeding. Don't stop because the stopping is then going to jam it up even more. Mastitis then is related to those things because that's an infection. If the milk is backed up and it has nowhere to go, it's going to get stuck. And then you don't want to then it sort of to hang out there. It doesn't have anywhere to go, and it could turn into an infection. It sounds very serious, but it's totally common. It's very, very easily treated. You want to keep nursing through it or pumping because, again, you want to keep that milk coming out and your body to be replenishing it. You want your baby to get that breast milk, so you want to make sure that you're feeding frequently. If you get mastitis, you're going to feel like you've gotten the flu. Like literally overnight, you're going to think, I feel terrible. I am so tired. You may have a low-grade fever, and you may not have connected that with breastfeeding. And it's always such a shock to moms, like, oh, but I thought I just had the flu. If you're feeling like that and you're nursing and your breasts are very swollen and you maybe haven't been feeding as often because you've been feeling kind of yucky, it's more than likely mastitis, which there are antibiotics that are very safe to take, you know, when you're nursing. So the key message of all these, sometimes you can't avoid them, but nursing frequently is literally one of the best rules with anything with nursing, with breastfeeding.
Perfect. Okay, well, let's hope none of our moms get any of those. Wouldn't that be wonderful? So one of the next questions I want to ask is, how can I increase my milk supply? I just feel like I never know if my baby's getting enough to eat. Sometimes, you know, I'm told, oh, nurse every 2 hours, nurse every 4 hours, my OB should say I should be this time. So how do I know that baby's getting enough to eat?
So like I mentioned before, the best way to keep up your milk supply, and it's a very simple premise of feeding on demand. Don't watch the clock. Now, that I'm talking about early days and in the first, you know, the early weeks, your baby will eventually get on a schedule. But honestly, in the beginning, really try not to focus on the clock. Focus on your baby. It defies logic, and you might have your mother-in-law or your mother or your friend or your sister or anybody or your doctor who says, nope, they should only be feeding every 2 hours, you're going to spoil them. It's just not true. There's no disrespect to other people, and I understand that people have their views on this, but your baby is basically telling you, my tummy is not full, I want to eat. And every day their tummy gets bigger, so it starts off like a little marble. And then at day three, it, you know, goes up to like, you know, maybe like a ping pong size. And then day 10, it gets a little bit bigger. It's like an egg. And so every time you feed your baby, their tummy is getting bigger. So that means that the time between feedings is going to get longer. But in the beginning, you're teaching, you know, your baby is teaching your body how much milk to make. And so that's the best way for you to keep up your supply and to make sure that you establish a supply. And it's really important, what I mentioned earlier, our bodies are designed to do this. This is Mother Nature. This is what our bodies were designed to do. Not everybody chooses to do it, and that's okay. Not everybody can do it, and that's okay. But the amount of moms that actually can't physically produce enough milk is really, really low. Because when our bodies are designed to do this, your body is already making the milk. The problems come in where someone says, you know what, you should get some rest, which I know is a very welcome, very welcome thing that someone would offer you. But you need, your body still needs that stimulation. So if someone says, I'm going to take the baby, you know, for a walk and I'm going to feed the baby, you want to be pumping to keep up that supply. So that's really one of the best ways, like the best way to keep up your supply. Pumping is a good substitute, but it's still never going to be as effective as a human baby, you know, pulling out that milk. That's really, feeding on demand is the best way to establish your supply.
Okay, Gina, we are going to take your word for that and try and not look at the clock. Kind of going on your last statement about, you know, taking a nap and somebody else watching the baby, I've always heard that it's so important for my partner to bond with the baby, but I'm breastfeeding the baby. So is there some way my partner can help with the breastfeeding?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, again, when you're establishing your supply, those first 4 weeks are really important. And we, and in general, breastfeeding educators, don't recommend using a bottle before 4 to 6 weeks because, again, you want to make sure that your baby's at the breast teaching the body how much milk to make. But in the meantime, there are a lot of things that partners can help do. If you've got another child or you've got other children, keeping the other children entertained while you're focusing on learning breastfeeding with this baby, even if you've done it before, you know, I know it doesn't sound like the sexiest thing ever, but honestly, when you're nursing and you're tired and you're recovering from birth, being able to hand the baby to someone and say, like, they're taking care of the diaper changes. They're keeping the baby entertained in between feedings. Like, sometimes you're going to need that time on your own, and that's totally understandable. You need a nap. Totally understandable. You might want to go out and take a walk. You might want to go out with your girlfriends. Those things are all really, really important. So having someone who actually can help with those practical things, like, you know, making dinner, cleaning the dishes, like doing the things that are going to make it easier for you to focus on the baby and recovering, is hugely important. The other part of it is, this is your decision, this is you and your baby, and having a supportive partner who, you know, not every dad or partner understands about breastfeeding, and they may feel totally shut out, but this is a choice that you've made. And so them actually helping talk to those people and saying, you know what, this is what we're doing. That's great. We really appreciate your advice, but, you know, helping in that way, because it can be a little exhausting, and making sure that you've got that time carved out for what you need to replenish yourself is a huge help. And also, you know, when baby's waking up at night, if baby's not next to you or in a bassinet or a co-sleeper, you know, my husband would go and get the baby and bring them to me when they were ready for nursing, because I was exhausted. I just had a baby. I was exhausted. So him bringing the baby to me, you know, then changing the diaper after, putting baby back to bed, but, you know, back to sleep, or however your situation is, all of those things, he can't physically breastfeed, and your partner may not physically be able to breastfeed the baby. However, there's so many things that come with nurture and, you know, nurturing and caring for that baby, and breastfeeding is a big part of it, but it's not the only part of it.
Awesome. Thank you. I think, you know, all the help you can get is always important. So this question's come in from some of the current people on the phone, and it's tips for going back to work and continuing to breastfeed. I think those 3 months after maternity leave are so scary because now you're leaving the baby, so you're dealing with childcare. But on top of that, you have the desire to continue breastfeeding. How can you make that work?
Yeah, it's daunting. And, you know, unfortunately, our maternity leave in the United States is not great. It's very little time for you to be with your baby. And by the time baby is sort of awakening and getting, you know, maybe starting to laugh and doing cute things, you go back to work. And sometimes you have to go back to work. Sometimes you want to go back to work. Whatever your situation, it feels, it's very difficult because you're leaving your baby. Breastfeeding for me was one of the ways that I could reconnect with my baby when I got back from work, which was amazing because I made it through the day. And even though pumping, some people, it's a labor of love, and I would focus on the labor part because it's kind of like, got to go make the donuts, got to go pump the milk. It's going to get tiresome, but it's a ways to a means. It's really in the same way that you're feeding your baby at regular intervals during the day when you're together, your body needs that stimulation regularly when you guys are apart so that your body keeps making the milk. Remember, what goes out gets replenished. A baby is always going to be, okay, not always, generally going to be the best way to get the milk out, because there are situations where moms are exclusively pumping, and that's great, that's okay. But that's why breast pumps were created, because we want to make sure that there is a something that's effective at getting the milk out and that you're basically tricking your body into thinking it's a baby. Of course, it's a machine. And when you've got your baby at your breast and then you've got a pump at your breast, you know it's not the same thing, but you're just trying to keep that supply up. So, you know, pumping 2 or 3 weeks ahead of milk before you go back. You don't want to wait until the day before to introduce a bottle or a cup, however
but,
you want to feed.
Dina, I think you faded out. Can you just repeat that last sentence once more time, please?
Oh, yeah, sure. Start having someone else practice giving baby, you know, breast milk, whether it's in a bottle or in a cup, however you're going to do it, before, you know, a couple weeks before you go back to work, because you don't want to start the day before, because babies do need a little bit of practice, because remember, your breast is going to be different than a bottle or a cup. You know, practice with pumping. Set your pup up. You know, sterilize it. Make sure that you understand how it works, because your body does need to get used to it, because your body's going to know that's not a baby. And so it does take a little bit of time. And one thing that we haven't mentioned is the Affordable Care Act. And you know, breast pumps are covered by insurance for the majority of people. There are certain situations, but, you know, a breast pump is covered by insurance now. So, you know, understanding from your insurance company, do you have coverage for a breast pump? When can you get that breast pump? And if you don't need to pump, don't pump. If you aren't going back to work, you don't need to pump. If you're going back maybe part-time and you're only going to be gone for a couple hours, you could use a manual pump or a single pump or a double pump. The whole thing, again, is regular stimulation and having a safe, clean place to do it. And under the Affordable Care Act, that also mandates that employers need to give moms a safe, clean place that's not the bathroom to pump in. And we've got more information on that on our website under pumping and under the Affordable Care Act. And there are lots of really good questions on there about what to ask your insurance company about the types of pumps that are covered, how exactly you can get it and when you can get it. But again, just like learning about breastfeeding, learning about pumping, knowing your pump, you know, making sure that you have the parts, and then making sure that you're regularly pumping during the day. And if there's a situation where you've got a meeting and you really need to pump, but you've got a meeting coming up in 20 minutes and you usually would be pumping for about 20, 25 minutes, you might not be able to pump. Pump for 5 minutes just to get that stimulation. You might need to pump a little bit longer later, but you just want to make sure that you keep that stimulation going.
So now that we are pumping, can you give us some tips about pumping and storing breast milk? So many questions. How do you store it? How long can you store it? Defrosting it? Can it be reused? Lots of questions where people are, you know, scared that the milk is going to go bad, and we know that it's labor of love.
Yeah, totally. You know, there are a lot of products out there for storing breast milk. You want to make sure that you have something that is specifically designed for storing breast milk. Our milk storage bags are designed with a double zipper lock seal, and that you can actually freeze laying down, and then that actually saves space in your freezer. It's very easy to thaw because breast milk is majority water, obviously vitamins, nutrients, all those things, but it's a lot of water, so it is very easily thawed. So when you're pumping, you're going to pump into a collection bottle that comes with the pump, and then you can keep it in that bottle, or you might want to, you're going to need to bring extra collection bottles because you're going to be pumping several times a day, or, and you can transfer those into breast milk storage bags when you get home, if you choose to. Milk can stay at room temperature for 7 to 8 hours as long as it's ambient room temperature. Now, I know that is a very subjective thing. If you're in Phoenix and it's super duper hot out, that would not be a good thing. If you're in Alaska and it's super duper cold out, that would not be a good thing. So you, if you want to keep it at room temperature, that's going to be okay. The majority of the pumps come with a cooler pack. You can put those in there with an ice pack, and those will be fine until you get home. If you happen to have a mini fridge or a community fridge that you can put your milk in the cooler bag and then in the fridge, that would be great. Milk, and we have a chart on our website, lanceno.com, that'll actually detail all this out. Milk, fresh milk can be kept in the fridge for up to 7 days. Milk then can be put, it can, in the back.
I'm sorry, we lost you again. So we heard milk. Yeah, I'm not sure what's happening, but let's go with it. Fresh milk can be kept for seven days, is what we heard.
Yeah, it's for 7 days in the refrigerator. And then you can just use that, you know, during the week. Like you can put it in the refrigerator, put it in a bottle or a cup and bring it to daycare or have it for your care provider. If you're not going to use it, you have enough milk for that week, put it in the freezer. That can be there for 3 months. In a deep freezer, it can be for 6 months. What I was mentioning, keeping it when you're frozen, don't keep it in the door. Keep it in the back because you don't want it to get partially thawed when you open that door. Every time you open and close, that's why our parents were always yelling at us, close the freezer door, you're letting all the cold out. You want to make sure that the milk stays frozen. You can use the oldest milk first. Sometimes moms have a question like, wait, I pumped when my baby was 6 weeks old and now she's 3 months old. Is it okay for me to use that milk? It's totally, totally fine. And, you know, making sure that when you're pumping that you're labeling the milk, that you're keeping it in a safe, you know, environment, that you're making sure, you know, if you, like, throw the pork chops or the chicken breast in the freezer, you want to make sure you're not knocking against the milk because we don't want any punctures or anything in the bags. I'm trying to think of, you know, so there are guidelines on our website that, and it's like a chart that you can actually keep and put on your fridge and your freezer as a reminder. But yeah, I mean, it's daunting for moms, you know, to think about. And you know, when you're bringing the milk to your care provider or daycare, if that's where you happen to bring your baby, you know, you want to make sure that it's labeled. And then what I did was I wanted to make sure that I had more milk in my freezer just in case. So just in case when I was traveling I got delayed, I wanted to make sure that if I left my baby three bottles that day, I would leave milk in my freezer at the daycare and at home to make sure that there was always an extra day or extra 2 days. You'll be amazed how much milk you'll get when you pump. And some moms have shown us pictures where they have freezers full, but that's okay if you don't have a freezer full. You just want to make sure that you have a little bit of a safety net, just so you have extra milk, because babies are going to start drinking more and more, and you want to be able to accommodate that when, you know, when they're growing and when they're going to daycare, et cetera.
Thank you. I just want to remind all our callers that if you have any questions, you can simply click on Ask a Question, and a box will pop up for you to type in a question and submit it. With that, Gina, I want to turn to some of the questions that have been coming on for the past 40 minutes. So one of the questions I've seen more than once was about nursing pillows. There's a lot on the market. We don't have to be brand specific, but is there a pillow that I absolutely have to have? Is there a position that I absolutely need to be in? Any suggestion for either of the two of those?
You know, nursing pillows can be really helpful. I think there are a lot of products that could be really helpful, and you don't have to use them, but if it works for you, go ahead and give it a try. One of the reasons that nursing pillows are really nice, but to be honest, you can also just use a regular pillow. They're nice because they help with a mom not having to kind of hunch over. You want to bring your baby to the breast. You don't want to bring the breast to the baby. Because if you think about that, even while I was saying that, I hunched myself over when I was thinking about bringing my breast to the baby. Your back is going to get strained. Your neck is going to get strained. And you also want to try to keep in an upright position as much as possible if you're in a rocker and you don't want to have that strain. Some moms like to lie down and the baby then is nursing on top of them. So there are a lot of positions to use. I think the difference between my first baby and my second baby is I was so rigid with my first baby. Like, I have to be sitting straight up. I need to have this pillow. I need to be in this position. And what you'll find, especially as babies get a little bit older, they're going to do gymnastics all over you. And they're going to do the position that they want to do. As long as they're latched on with a very wide open mouth and they're transferring that milk, whatever position works for you and for your baby, that's the best position. You want to make sure that you're as relaxed as possible. And, you know, what's nice about those nursing pillows or any pillow really that you wedge underneath you and your arm is that it does help keep your arm as you're cradling your baby. It does help keep the position. It keeps your baby at the breast. It keeps your baby tummy to tummy with you. So they're certainly helpful. What I would recommend is going to the store, putting one on. There are cool ones that, you know, you can snap on or tie around you, not tie around you, but kind of snap around you. See how it feels. Sit down in it and, you know, take a doll or take a stuffed animal and see how it would feel to have a baby in the crook of your arm, you know, accessing your breast like that. They're certainly helpful. You know, give it a try. Take a look at videos online and see how a mom uses a nursing pillow so you could say, like, oh, that might be comfortable. I wouldn't say it's an absolute must-have. I think it's a nice thing to have, and it's certainly something that a lot of moms have been, you know, have found really, really helpful. I used one. I used one more with my first child than I did with my second, just because I kind of, at that point, I was like standing up, spinning plates, and nursing him at the same time, because you just sort of you figure out how to do lots of things all at one time.
Before we run out of time, I really would like to thank Lancineau again for putting together this highly informative teleclass. Your sponsorship of today's class continues to allow moms from all over the country and all over the world to take our classes for free. So a big shout out to Lancineau, and thank you. I do have another question that's come in, and it was, you know, a little bit generic, but I think it's something that we should definitely cover, and it's, why should I breastfeed, and what are the benefits for both the mom and the baby? Again, a lot of wives' tales out there. So I'm wondering what the expert thinks.
Yeah, I mean, the list of benefits for moms and babies is so long. And if you think about it a different way, the breastfeeding reduces the risk of so many things. For baby, it's really, this is human milk designed by your body specifically for your baby. You carried that baby for 9 months. You know each other intimately. Your body produced that baby. So it is the perfect blend at the perfect time, at the perfect temperature for your specific baby, which is very cool. You know, there are so many protective benefits. It basically, breast milk seals your baby's gut, and it provides a protective barrier against bacteria. It builds antibodies. It makes sure that your baby, you know, if your baby gets a cold, they're not going to have as severe a cold as they maybe would have if they weren't breastfeeding. If your baby does have a cold, they'll latch onto your breast. Their saliva will transmit germs into your body. Your body will start making antibodies, put it into the breast milk, and transmit it back through the breast milk to your baby so they get better quicker, which is just fascinating to me. It reduces the risk of ear infections, childhood obesity, respiratory infections, flu, cold. It's just childhood cancers. I mean, it is just ear infections. I mean, I seriously could go on for days, and this is all evidence-based. For mom, it reduces risk for breast cancer, ovarian cancer, uterine cancer, heart disease, diabetes, obesity, overweight. And again, all of those things have been documented and evidence-based. And it's breastfeeding is not just a nice thing to do. It's lovely. It's bonding. It's what our bodies were designed to do. But these health benefits and reducing risk for these very, you know, sometimes very serious medical conditions, and that protection doesn't just happen while you're breastfeeding. It actually will safeguard baby and you for years because it provides that protective benefit. So, you know, not everybody can do it. Not everybody wants to do it, but it really is a health, you know, a health benefit for you and for your baby. It, you know, it means fewer days off sick. It means fewer days of baby being uncomfortable, being sick. It means fewer times for you being sick. It's something that can't be replicated scientifically or synthetically. It just can't. That's why breast milk substitutes are called substitutes, because they're substitutes, and there's a reason that they're there, but you can't replicate what the human body is doing for a, you know, a specific human baby. It's amazing. Can you tell I love breastfeeding? Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, I sure can. I love it. Brings back such memories. Okay, one more question, and we'll keep it quick, but we've had this from a few people. How long should I breastfeed my baby for? Not in means in chunks of time, but until they're 1, 6 months. Is there a standard answer?
Yeah, so all of those health benefits that I talked about, the research has shown that ideally a baby would be exclusively breastfed for the first 6 months. And this is recommended by the American Academy of Pediatrics, OBGYNs, nurses, like just the major medical organizations, World Health Organization recommend this. And the reason for that is because the breast milk seals the gut, and so not having anything else, no water, tea, cereal, formula, anything is ideally the best way to go for the first 6 months. Then at 6 months, you introduce solids, and they start practicing with textures, and they start, you know, having, you know, fruits and veggies and all those fun things, as in addition to breast milk. So that really is recommended for the first year. In the U.S., it is recommended breastfeeding for at least a year. The World Health Organization talks about 2 years. There really is no magic date on the calendar when breast milk starts being less beneficial. I mean, in history and in the world, breast milk is the ideal food for human babies. And so the longer you do it, the more, you know, the more you're protected against breast cancer. The longer you do it, the more protected your baby is against common illnesses and also, you know, childhood cancers, all those things. So, you know, moms think, well, it's, maybe it's not society doesn't think it's okay for me to do this. It's really what you want to do and what you're comfortable with. But medically speaking, ideally you would be breastfeeding for at least 6 months, ideally a year. But, you know, when you get the hang of it, and by the time they're one, they're really only feeding, you know, a couple of times a day, maybe once or twice a day. And so it's not like you're feeding 6, 8, 12 times a day when they're 1 year old. And again, keeping nursing and not introducing cow's milk, nursing is going to be more beneficial than cow's milk. So those kind of things, you know, it's really up to you and your situation, but ideally medically and research-wise, evidence-based-wise, it's 6 months at least and a year ideally. Mm-hmm. But take it a minute at a time.
Exactly. One day at a time, that's what they always say. Okay, well, you guys have all been great. Thank you all for your wonderful questions. We know that Gina has gone over a wealth of terrific information today. So once again, within the next few days, we'll be sending you a link to the recorded class along with great resources such as the Lanceno website, which I know we referenced, and their bags and their schedules and their freezing information. So really take a look at that. Also, I really want to give you a huge thank you, Gina, for your wonderful expertise. You're a true expert, but you're so passionate about this topic, and it's so, so clear to everyone listening. So thank you, everyone, for joining us today. I just want to wish you a great day, and I hope to connect with you again soon at our next teleclass. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye.